Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. It is official. The World Economic Forum, Klaus and Bigglesworth have gone from evil genius to full retard. And if you haven't seen Tropical Thunder, I think that's the name of the movie. What are you doing? You're missing out. You got to go back and watch it. That was one of the last movies that got away with being politically incorrect. It's absolutely awesome. Just check it out if you haven't seen it. Okay, let's get into this story from our favorite website on the planet Earth, the World Economic Forum. And this is a story about the circular economy. Circular, circles. What does that even mean? I don't know, but it sounds just amazing and very clever and modern. We're going to use technology just for the economy to go around and around and around. The three circular economy approaches to reduce demand for critical metals. Remember, holes in the ground are bad, evil. But fortunately, Klaus and Bigglesworth have a solution to digging holes in the ground. They want to dig holes somewhere else, but we'll get into that in a moment. That's my cliffhanger for the video. All right, key points. Shifting from... Oh, by the way, the article is written by a gal named, or person, human, by the name of Winnie Ye. And they, because I don't know their preferred pronouns, or not they, their title is Lead Responsible Sourcing. Wow. Think of all the goods and services Winnie creates. Just a pure source of economic wealth, I'm sure. Okay, key talking points. Shifting from fossil fuels to renewables, and the renewables are circular. Just FYI, if you didn't know it, they create a circle. Circles are good. Straight lines, bad. Very, very bad. Shifting from fossil fuels to renewables requires huge amounts of critical metals. Recycling alone won't be enough to sustain the amount of materials needed. We need to increase sharing, reuse, and preference for longevity to reduce demand. I love it when they try to mold preference. Like, you people, basically what they're saying here is you people are too stupid to understand the problem. Therefore, we need to manipulate you. We need to change your hardwiring. We need to influence your current preferences because you are the problem. The human being, the average Joe and Jane, you are ruining the planet because you are headed in a straight line, not in a circle. All right, here's their little, they've got these diagrams for everything, and who knows what they even mean. It doesn't matter. So going, the first step is that they're doing this in three simple, fast steps. I wonder where they got that. So they go, or the first step number one is go from owning to using. And this is just, this dovetails on you'll own nothing, but you will be happy. Trust the central planners and the authoritarians. Don't trust your own instincts. You can't tell what's going to make you happy. Only we can tell you what's going to make you happy. So they start off by saying, be honest. Ironic, isn't it? When they're telling us to be honest. Klaus is telling us to be honest. Okay. When I was growing up, we would call that the pot calling the kettle black. You likely have at least one mobile phone tucked in the bottom of your drawer. Actually, Winnie, I do not. Possibly an unused hard drive taking up space. You aren't alone. The average car or van in England is driven 4% of the time. While most already have a personal phone, 39% of workers globally have employer-provided laptops and mobile phones. This is not at all resource efficient. It might not be resource efficient, but I would argue that it is productivity efficient. So we've got a cost-benefit analysis. I agree. It's great to get an Uber, but is it as productive as owning your own car from a standpoint of if you need to get to places quickly to get things done, to be more productive? Are you going to get there faster in your own car when you can just run over there, hop in and go, or when you have to sit and wait for 20 minutes when there's some sort of Uber spike or when the traffic is, in fact, one of my editors last night, I went to the gym around 4 o'clock, like I usually do. And I got back at like 6 o'clock and she was still waiting down at the lobby of my building. And I said, what are you doing? Have you gone home yet? And she says, no, I can't get an Uber. It's too busy because it was raining. That is a perfect example of all, although it may be more resource efficient, it isn't more efficient from the standpoint of productivity. So back from that tangent here, more sharing, which means you'll own nothing, can reduce ownership of idle equipment and thus material usage. Okay, great. So if you're renting everything, again, we go back to this, who's owning it? And the conclusion they always come to that they don't state explicitly is, well, it's just the giant corporations will own everything and you'll rent it from them. And you're just too stupid to know that you're going to be a lot happier in that world. So car sharing platforms such as Getaround, BlueSG, have already seized the opportunity to offer vehicles where you pay per hour used. Okay. So again, this sounds like a great idea. And as someone who grew up in the 70s, the 80s, early 90s, I've seen a lot of technology. And most of it, I will agree, it's definitely better. It makes life better. But sometimes you get technology that it makes it worse. It doesn't really make it better at all. And I'll give you a fantastic example. These stupid menus that we have in restaurants now with this QR code. This has got to be the dumbest, worst idea in human history, bar none. I'm very confident in saying that. So normally, back in the day, when you would go to a restaurant, you would immediately be just given a menu. Just, yeah, sir, you sit down, here's your menu, you just go through that menu, what do I want? Okay, 10 seconds later, you can order. Not anymore. Now we've got this wonderful QR technology or QR code technology for menus. So now what you have the opportunity, instead of getting your menu in 10 seconds, no, we've got a much, much, much better way through technology, of course. And this technology, like they always say, this is going to change the world. So now what you can do, instead of getting this horrific, antiquated paper menu in 10 seconds, is you can sit there for 10 minutes trying to get the stupid menu to come up on your phone. And it doesn't work, and then half the time it works, and you don't know where it is because you're trying to look at something this size instead of something this size. And then instead of being on one page, now you've got to go to like 15 different pages on your phone to just figure out where the appetizers are. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. Show me one person that thinks that's somehow an improvement from just getting a menu in 10 seconds where everything is listed on one page. Now it takes, I have literally been to restaurants where no one can get their phone to work, and they don't know if it's because of the Wi-Fi, they don't know what's going on. And you'll sit there literally for 10 minutes, just pleading with the people, please give me a menu. Please let me give you my money. Yet nothing. The waiter, oh, sorry, we don't have any menus. You're just going to have to get the QR. Well, what if I can't get the QR code? Oh, and I've done that too, where the QR code just doesn't work. And so then you're like, I guess I'll just have a Caesar salad. Do you guys have that? And you have to go through a list of what you think they might have and have the waiter or waitress tell you yes or no. I mean, come on. How does no one see this? I digress. I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but that is one of the best recent examples of technology taking us back. It's making life worse. It's making us less efficient, far less productive. Anyway, back to Klaus and Bigglesworth. So, that was my point. Is that, can you imagine having to get a car by the hour? And like the last time I tried to use, Toro or whatever, I thought, this would be an improvement from renting a car. And then you have to go there and you have to download your picture, and then it doesn't go through. And then you have to get some username and you can't remember the password. And it's like, at a certain point, I'm like, forget it. I'm not even, although it's a pain in the neck, it's easier just to go through Enterprise or something. And I can't even comprehend having to do that by the hour I mean, and then what happens to your freedom and flexibility, right? Let's just say that I want to have it 2 hours. I get to 55 minutes and I'm like, oh shoot, I needed an extra hour. Oh, well, you can't do that. And where do you leave it? Just on the side of the road? Like all these scooters. That's another example. Remember that fad back in, what is that, like 2019, right? When all these companies were coming out with the scooters and you just leave them by the side of the road. And then you'd go through, you'd drive down the main drag, and it was like a junkyard of scooters just lying everywhere, just destroyed and on stairs and in bushes and everything. I haven't seen as many of those lately. Even when I was in Miami, you got a few of them there. But in Medellin, that was a huge fad. And now I don't see the scooter rentals at all. And why is that? Because it was a bad idea. I'm guessing renting cars by the hour or the minute is just as bad of an idea. To enable a broader transition from ownership to usership, see how it's subtle. Subtle, guys. Don't worry about this. You'll own nothing. It's just don't use hyperbole here. This is you're sensationalizing everything. There's nothing to worry about. Yes, we global elite. We meet at Davos every single year. And it is true. We are socialists and Marxists. And we hate Milton Friedman. We hate free market capitalism. But don't worry about that. We want what's best for you. And right now, owning stuff, that's going to make you miserable. If you share stuff constantly and you don't own anything, this is how you will achieve utopia. If you didn't own anything, you didn't own your headphones. In fact, who even needs to own a pen? I mean, I only use this pen like, I don't know, 5 minutes of the day. I could be renting it out for 23 hours and 55 minutes for the rest of the day. Wouldn't that be amazing if I just had random people showing up at my door constantly, just renting my pen, or maybe they could rent my empty bottle of water? That would be fantastic. Or they could rent my legal pad. I mean, they could rent so much stuff around here. They could rent my charging cord. I mean, who needs to buy a charging cord for like $3 when you could rent one for like 6 cents a minute? I mean, wouldn't that be far more efficient? Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. So here, they conclude this step number one by saying this is the mindset needed to redesign cities to reduce private vehicle and other usage. What if we don't want to redesign cities? What if we want to get out into urban areas? And I think this is one of the key points. See, everything that they're talking about makes it harder and harder for you to not live in this little condensed city where you rent everything and just live in a pod. This is the angle they're trying to go, or this is the direction they're trying to go. And they just subtly try to sell you on it, bit by bit by bit. It sounds so good. It sounds so sustainable. Who doesn't like circles? Circles are wonderful. And if you could just live in a circle constantly, just think about how much happier you would be. See, they spin it like this, but they don't tell you the reality. And when you think through it and look at the reality, like, that sounds like a hellscape to me. That doesn't sound like utopia. That sounds like my nightmare. Step number two, enable preference for longevity. This is why I titled the video, World Economic Forum has gone full retard. Who doesn't want to get the most out of everyday products like washing machines and increasingly domestic solar panels? I like all the examples they use are things they want you to buy. Like they're just gradually trying to, you know, if there was someone that I hung out with daily that was this kind of passive aggressive, that they never came out and told you what was on their mind. They just gradually give these subtle hints. How bad does that piss you off when people are like that? Don't you just far prefer people to look you in the eye and say, hey, I want to do this? Not just these subtle little hints because they're too emotionally feeble just to come up and look you in the eye and tell you what's on their mind. They have to just throw out these little subtleties constantly just to try to steer you in the direction they want you to go. It's just, it drives me crazy. My point is the World Economic Forum, they do that at a global level. Increasing a product's longevity can reap significant benefits. Keeping a smartphone for 5 years instead of three reduces phone's annual carbon footprint by 31%. Okay, fantastic. So in the United States, we have, and if you guys have never purchased a car outside the US, you might not know this, but we have an insane amount of regulation around how cars are built. In fact, here in Colombia, you can get cars that are same brands, Toyota, Ford, Chevy, etc., but they're different models and they're almost identical to what you can get in the States, but they don't have the epic amount of regulations and restrictions around how you can produce them and how many airbags they have to have and how a fuel for blah, 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 blah. And ironically, what happens is when you make cars that quote unquote safe, which they're really, I would argue they're not that much safer, but when you make them quote unquote safe, you make them heavier. If you make them heavier, they're less fuel efficient. So then what do you have to do? You have to come up with all these schemes and put turbochargers on them. Now you can't even get a V8. Right, you have to get a Range Rover for heaven's sakes, and it's a four cylinder with like eight turbochargers on it just to give it enough power to get up a hill like this. What do those turbochargers do to the car? Do they make do they make it last longer, or do they make it last a lot less? The answer, for those of you who don't know anything about cars, is that makes a car last a lot less time. So ironically, what we're doing by creating all these regulations to reduce the carbon footprint of the car is we're making the cars last less time. And also we're making them more maintenance heavy. So the more maintenance you have, the more parts you have to replace, the more things that can go wrong with a car. So you go back to the very first car I had. This was when I was 14 or so. My dad got me a car. And, you know, just for those young people watching, to tell you how much times have changed and how helicopter parenting is so extreme now. I remember when I was 15 years old, maybe even 14, because I don't even think I had I definitely didn't have my driver's license, but I don't even think I had my learning permit. But my dad taught me how to drive when I was 13, 12, 13. Right around there. He taught me how to drive a stick like you should, for heaven's sakes. And he had a Volkswagen Rabbit. So I'm sure those old timers on the video right now remember what a Volkswagen Rabbit was. And this was maybe, I don't know, mid 80s or something like that. And when I was four, we lived about, I don't know, 5 miles or something away from the school I went to. And this was when I was 14. And my dad would constantly allow me to drive to school. By myself, no permit, no driver's license, no helmet, nothing, nada. Not where he would follow me in a different car or I would follow him. No. Nobody, just me, 14 years old, driving to school by myself. On top of that, my dad would even let me take the car skiing. So in Portland, we live next to a mountain called Mount Hood. And there's ski resorts that are maybe an hour outside of town. So my dad would let me take the car skiing when I was 14 and 15 years old by myself or sometimes with my buddies. And this is prior to me having a driver's license. So I'm going off on some serious tangents here. But my point is this was like a 1982 or 1983 diesel Volkswagen Rabbit. This thing probably didn't. I can't remember. I remember it was tan, but I don't think it even had a radio. If it did, maybe it was like an AM thing. I highly doubt it had AC. It definitely didn't have electronic windows. And for the kids watching, they probably don't even know. They've probably never even seen a car that has windows where you actually have to roll it up manually. But think about how, and it sounds funny, but think about how few parts that Volkswagen Rabbit had. What can go wrong? Nothing. There's only like four parts on the whole car. So it would last a long time. Let's go back to those cars, those trucks I used to flip. And I still have a lot of them, as you guys know. These mid-90s Ford F-250s and F-350s that had a 7.3 power stroke diesel engine in them. You want to talk about a car that lasts a long time. I mean, those things go 500,000 miles before they're even broken in. I mean, you can drive those things a million miles easy if you take care of them, right? So if Klaus is trying to tell us that we need things that last longer, so we have to dig fewer holes in the ground, and this reduces the carbon footprint, by that metric, one of my diesel 1995 pickup trucks has a lower carbon footprint than a modern day Tesla, because the Tesla is going to wear out faster, require more parts, which requires more holes in the ground to be dug up either now or in the future. Where once you buy that Power Stroke, you're not going to have to dig another hole for the next 40 years because the only thing you're going to have to put in that car is diesel and some oil because it definitely burns oil. But you see where I'm going with this. It's mental gymnastics, and they can sit there and talk about how we need this, 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 and this, while at the same time, the laws and narrative they're trying to create produces less of what they are trying to champion. And this is when, if you just hear it at surface level and you're not really thinking about it, it's like, oh yeah, well, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, if we could just make our solar panels last longer and we just make everything last longer, yes, carbon footprint, why not? Who could be against that? Then we don't think about their policies they're trying to enact that actually reduce the amount of time that things last, such as vehicles. And if we just went back to those dirty, filthy, by the way, just, I mean, what, 10 years ago, you could buy a diesel Golf that got like 80 or 90 miles to the gallon, and that has very, very little carbon emission. So, and if you could get one that doesn't have the electric windows, doesn't have all these things that can go wrong, just think about how long that will last. Think about how many parts go into that, and think about how many future parts will be needed for that car compared to a hybrid Range Rover, which Klaus would be like, oh, yes, the hybrid Range Rover, right? But again, the Range Rover is going to require us to dig a lot more holes in the ground than, ironically, that 2010 diesel Golf. While some product makers are transitioning to a subscription model to reward longevity, a bigger opportunity lies with commerce platforms. Today, customers can search by products, by price, brand, color, technical specs, and increasingly sustainability claims. Durability needs to become a feature too. Okay, again, if you want things to be durable, let's go back to 95 F-250 7.3 Power Stroke diesel. Let's not move into a world where we have hybrid Jaguars. Oh man, just the insanity. You can't make up this degree of pretzel logic. Their customers save both time and money and additional environmental benefits. However, more data and consistent durability metrics are needed before we can easily compare and choose durable products. I like how they are telling us this as though they are somehow producing anything. What is Klaus manufacturing other than totalitarianism? Nothing. How does he know what's going on here as far as durability metrics? Step number three, build pride in second life. What if something can no longer be used for its purpose it was originally sold for? When an electric vehicle battery is replaced, it may still have up to 80% capacity remaining. Already, retired electric vehicle batteries have been repurposed to power streetlights and a stadium. Okay, and by the way, let's just say you drive that 1995 pickup truck for a million miles and then it just cashes out. Then what do you do with it? You use it for parts for all these other trucks so you don't have to create more parts from scratch. General Motors is beginning to design batteries with the ease of transition into second life in mind. Okay, so my point here is to kind of give a wake-up call to Klaus and say, listen, what you're arguing for, Klaus, is the free market. Because if there is a opportunity, a viable opportunity for batteries and all these things to be used. And I like how he always talks about batteries being used again, but he never talks about something he doesn't like being used again. You know, he never talks about gas station pumps being used in emerging markets so we don't have to create more gas station pumps or oil drilling well, or oil drilling tools or something like that, right? Okay, but my point is, if this is such a wild opportunity, it's such an amazing opportunity, then the market's going to handle this and you don't have to worry about it. And then you could do this whole article in two steps, not three. That's the amazing thing with the free market, is if the actual consumers, the average Joe and Jane, want something to be circular and they're willing to pay for it, then the free market will produce it. So the global elite don't have to jam it down our throat. All right, guys, there you have it. Straight from the World Economic Forum. As always, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism, and pushing back against the crazies, the retards at the World Economic Forum. I'll see you on the next video.